Hello, my name's Bill Burr. And I feel good about being Conan O'Brien's friend, but I feel this is a little red flag that it might be a little narcissist that I got to fucking say why I'm his friend every time. I feel like I've already answered this question.
I'm called a bottomless hole. There's no filling this. Every time you're going to have to repeat.
Gee, what is that like?
Fall is here, hear the yell, back to school, ring the bell. Brand new shoes, walking blues, climb the fence, books and pens. I can tell that we are gonna be friends. Yes, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Hey there, welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. Sitting here with Sona Mousessian and a giggling, I don't know why, Matt Gourley. It's the way I introduce the show, so just get over it. You can't giggle every single time.
I can't get over it because every time it's hilarious. It's like a nosebleed of change of environment. You go from to hi and welcome to the show.
I'm a professional broadcaster.
Yeah.
Okay. And I have a question, and this is a serious question, which is, can I become flexible at my age? I mean, physically flexible. And this is something I've been thinking about a lot lately because I know people do yoga and stuff. I am a particularly tight-assed gentleman of a later vintage. You see me all the time trying to stretch it out, don't you, Sona?
I think your body is capable of it.
Yeah.
I don't think your mind is capable of it.
Be honest.
I'm being very honest.
Sounds honest to me.
I am so, I think your body can become flexible if you work at it, but you're also so like tightly wound, you're just like...
No, but you see me trying, right?
I do see you trying.
I do a lot of like squats and bends, and I'm trying. And I was doing a live show with Tig Notaro once, and I was backstage just trying to stretch before I go out, and she had the microphone and could see me and was just calling me out in front of the whole audience. Like, Conan's doing these stupid stretches that will in no way. It was hilarious. Of course, she's hilarious. I'm kind of fascinated with this idea that I think there's part of me that thinks because of what I come from, this very tightly wound, I don't know, Boston Catholic, whatever you want to do.
Sure.
And then my own propensities that it's never going to happen. And then there are days where I think, no, I could do this. I could do this. I could become a flexible person. But then I think there's another school of thought. No, if you're not flexible at the age I'm at now, you can look it up. Google away.
I don't think that's true.
And I'm sorry, do you want to be flexible just to be flexible? Or to what end? Is there a sport you want to play?
I'd like to become a sexual athlete.
Oh, dear.
A sexual athlete?
What I would like to do is, I don't want to stiffen up as I get older.
And you're wearing some, like,
Yeah, and I'm bringing it up today because, as you know, I'm still... displaced, whatever. Very fortunate to still have my place, but I do sometimes just pick clothes out of the back of my car. And today I picked this stuff out and I realized I basically wore what you would wear to like a gym today, which I rarely do. I usually like to dress.
Can you stand up?
Yeah, sure.
I think it looks like you're in the Hunger Games.
Yeah.
Yeah. My wife got these for my son. He didn't want them. And I put them on, and then I realized
they're very uncomfortable.
I know you should be. There's this weird crosshatching. It looks to me like I'm on the set of Logan's Run,
yes, yeah,
the TV show from or Tron. Yeah,
yeah. Right, right.
And this is
right.
Not me. I never do this.
I think you're just missing a headband.
Yeah, but because I'm wearing this, I do feel there's a little bit of an 80s vibe, but also because I'm wearing this, when you wear clothes like this, you start doing stretches. And it was on my mind because I started doing stretches today out in the main room where everybody is. And I got on the floor and other people, RJ, who works here at the podcast. He told me he's been stretching like on a professional level since he was 5.
What? Yeah. What? He stretches an hour a day.
He stretches an hour a day. And
yeah.
and here's the thing. He can't stand. He's so relaxed and loose.
I admire that.
No. He's brought into work in a bowl. Like gazpacho, and they pour him into his seat and he does his work. But no, he's very impressive. He's super physically fit. And
he's a black belt.
Black belt. He's like a multi-degree black belt in Taekwondo.
I take back my reaction.
You should.
Maybe we should get him in here. He's probably out there. Is RJ out there? Can RJ come in? Because I'm very impressed with RJ.
Yeah.
And you know what? A lot of people work here. Not impressed with a lot of them. I literally go around looking. Is there someone here who I'm impressed with? Please, have a seat.
Hi, RJ.
Hey, guys.
RJ, I should be asking you this question. First of all, what is your actual position here at the show?
So I'm Adam's executive assistant.
Right.
And I do a lot of stuff for basically whatever Adam asks for. I just kind of do it. Like, that's the easiest way of saying
that's
it.
That's kind of sinister.
Yeah, that sounds so.
Dead bodies.
I saw you the other day breaking into an ATM with a crowbar.
He asked for money.
I know. And he said, I don't want to use a card. Anyone can use a card. Use this crowbar. We were talking the other day. You mentioned stretching. It's been in the back of my head. And then today, before I know it, I'm on the ground, you're on the ground, and you're showing me these different stretches. And you did one where your hips basically just flattened out like a spatchcocked chicken that had just been... and I was like, my hips will never do that. Yeah,
but
I would need
an
operation.
No. So we were doing frog pose, and it takes time. The thing with flexibility is you can't force it at first. You kind of have to let your body ease into it.
Oh, that's a problem.
Once your body can ease into it, that's when we figure out how to contract muscles in a certain way.
Yeah.
And then when it lets go, when you let it go, then you fall forward.
Sona will tell you, because Sona has spent many years observing me. She watches how I wash makeup off.
Oh, my God.
She watches how I brush my teeth.
Jesus.
And I could start a fire on my face. Everything I do is
to get it
say
done.
Everything, but like... quick and hard. Like, let's get this done.
Yeah.
And there's a self-loathing involved in it. So stretching is the antithesis to all of that.
Yeah.
And it's breathing.
It's a lot.
And just being calm and patient.
Can you touch your toes without bending your legs?
If I had an operation where my knees were removed and my feet were presented to me.
That's how I am.
My problem is, of course, I have a little bit of an unusual build, very long legs, shorter torso proportionally. So, yeah, if I really lean for a while, yes, I can get down there.
I can't even do that.
Well, you're a mess. I mean, I don't want to.
Yeah, that's
true.
I do think it takes time. I think you get sometimes impatient. You're like, I want to be flexible now, but you have to just like take your time with it, maybe. Can you be patient?
Here's my question is, RJ, would you be willing, I shift you away from your responsibilities with Adam? Because whatever shit you're doing for him, he can do for himself. And you just become my full-time stretch guru.
Yo, that'd be great. Let's do it. We'll both dress how you're dressing today.
We'll do it. Oh, really? We'll both dress
like that, yeah.
Like a guy from an early 80s space television sci-fi show.
Okay. For sure.
I'm into this. I want to try it. I want to try and become more flexible.
Yeah.
I want to evolve. This is something I'm saying as a serious thing. I am interested in this concept that I can keep evolving, that I can keep changing in certain ways. A lot of cool things have happened in the last 10 years that I didn't see coming. So why couldn't I become flexible?
I agree.
Yeah.
And I think you should definitely put the work into it. Like, and then be patient.
I want RJ to do it. I want him to do. Is there any way that you can do all the stretching? I'm not involved, but then somehow, I inherit all the benefits.
In the inheriting part, probably not, but I need somebody to be like my camera guy when I'm stretching.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Like, don't see my photos.
I have. He is like full, like past splits. It's amazing.
Wow. Really?
I know.
Crazy.
It's pretty incredible.
That's crazy. And but also you started when you were 5.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I was really into martial arts. The first thing I told my mom what I wanted to be when I grew up was a Power Ranger.
Yeah.
So then she got me into martial arts and I just stayed. I ended up doing that for a little over 20 years.
To the point where you can take a Power Ranger now. You can beat one.
Let's do it. Let's find a Power Ranger.
I think I just joined like the evil side button.
There's probably one walking around Hollywood Boulevard.
Yeah.
And you're just gonna start kicking his ass.
Yeah.
Poor guy's gonna have like a fanny pack. He's just trying to get
He just wants
money.
A tip.
He just wants a tip so he can take a selfie with you. Suddenly he's getting wailed on by this red-bearded martial artist. Well, RJ, I'm very impressed by what you can do, and I will try to learn from you. I will try to absorb. You are now my You are Yoda to my Mark Hamill in the second one of those things that
Luke
later
Skywalker
became
Empire Strikes Back. Let's just get
the, it was the second
honor the text.
It was the second one, and then but I guess now it's actually the 15th.
Well, I'm with you on that. How's flexibility of personality going?
Yeah.
Nope.
Is that in play at all?
Iron Rod.
No.
Maybe we evolve into a nicer person.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what we're.
Who's going to listen to that podcast?
I know it's going to suck. It'll suck.
Hey, let's go see the new Don Rickles. He's really nice to the audience. And he gives everybody some fruit salad. Later, Don Rickles is broke. Thank you, RJ. All right, guys, let's get into it. My guest today, that's right, RJ's a redhead. I'm a redhead. My next guest today, also a redhead, hilarious comedian whose latest special, Bill Burr Drop Dead Years, premieres March 14th on Hulu. He's also making his Broadway debut in Glengarry Glen Ross later this month. I love this guy. I'm thrilled he's with us today. Bill Burr, welcome. You and I have, we have a special connection. I really believe that. We're both gingers.
Yes.
We both grew
up. Unsightly from the Massachusetts area. We're sort of the, with a spice in the stew. That's what the gingers are. We can't be next to each other. Like, we're only allowed, L.A. County only allows us to hang out once a year and have a dinner. It's like,
there's only two of us that are allowed to be together. Two gingers from the Boston area that are incredibly, a weird mixture of bitterness, right? That has, I mean.
I would have gone with anger first, but okay, we'll go bitterness, anger, confused.
I hide my anger, I think, or have in the past. Don't I hide it better than Bill?
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah.
But it's there.
Children, don't I hide it when I'm smacking you in the station wagon? Agree with all my points, or there will be a discussion afterwards.
But Sona, you've seen, and Matt, you guys have seen up close the beast, right? You've seen the beast.
We have.
But for many years on television, I was a, quote, good guy. But there was a Bill Burr inside me. Always.
Yeah, I think there is.
Why do you got to put your anger on me? I had nothing to do with you and whatever happened to you.
How do we know?
Huh?
How do we know? We were in the same era. I know you're younger than me, but
well,
I
you
remember...
were older than me and you were always taller. So, I mean, if anything happened, it was you. You threw the ice ball at me or socked me down at Fitzy's. Something happened. Stole the stereo out of my fucking shitbox car. What a radio thieves do now.
I don't know.
You know,
I don't know what
gotta,
they
like,
do.
You're going to take the whole dashboard out and just walk around with this odd-shaped iPad. Has anybody got a 2023 Mercedes? Dude, back in the day, you could steal a stereo and fit in everybody's fucking car.
Do you go
another with- job lost to AI.
Do you go to back to reunions and things like that?
A high school reunion?
I don't know if I told you this, but I went back to one of mine years ago, a high school reunion, and I was doing the late night show, well-known person. I go back, and this guy comes up to me, and he goes, hey, Conan, remember the time that you and me busted into that liquor store down by the Point? And we stole all that booze, but the cops came and we both took off. And you went left and I went right. And you got all the booze and then you drank it yourself. And I'm listening. I'm like, you have the wrong guy.
Right.
I have never had a parking violation in my life. I didn't drink until I was like 26. He's got the wrong guy. But he inserted me into his story. And I thought, I bet that happens to you. Unless, no, you were probably the guy that was stealing.
I don't understand how someone doesn't. Was it that 6'4" ginger? Or was, I mean, how many of you,
right,
how
right.
many of you were out there?
Right. Yeah. There was that guy I went to high school with who looked like Jane Lynch.
I couldn't remember.
I think I committed a crime with him. No.
I went to high school with, I had a really cool grade. Like everybody, like, it was funny. It was sort of like, everybody, by my senior year, everybody was sort of collectively partying with each other. So there wasn't like, you know, you had the cliques, the jocks, you had the people that took wood shop, the, you know, the burnouts or whatever, and then just the background people like me. And then by the end of it, we used to go down this place, Dan Road, which was this industrial park that was slowly being built, taking over the woods or anything. Mm-hmm. But they had like all of these dirt roads back there and these burnt up cars for insurance and shit. We used to drive down there and drink. And every weekend, the party just kept getting bigger and bigger. And everybody was sort of high and drunk and just kind of got along with each other. So I've only been to one high school reunion. I went to my 25th and I had a great time.
But, oh, good.
But because I do stand up, like I go around and I run in a lot of people come out to my shows. So I kind of have like this never ending sort of high school reunion, which is cool. When they hit me up or whatever, I always, you know, end up talking to them backstage and shit, and then get freaked out about how old their kids are versus mine. But
yeah, I chose. Right. You got young kids.
Yep. 8 and 4 and a half.
Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. My kids are in their late 50s. My children. They have sciatica.
No, you know. You started a little bit late too, and I'm still way behind you. Yeah.
Yeah. You're way behind me. You know, I watched your
in
special.
In many areas.
Yes. I exactly. Don't rub it in. I watched your special, Drop Dead Years.
Yeah.
Loved it. And I know it's coming out. When's it coming out? I want to make sure I get. It's out right now. Yeah. Okay. We're taping this a little beforehand. We're taping this in 1974.
1974.
We're very excited about the Red Sox next year, the 75 Red Sox.
It should be amazing. Lynn. And I'm glad that busing crisis is finally over.
Oh, finally. Yeah. No more racism. No more racism in Boston.
And I'm looking forward to that story just sort of disappearing. Yeah. So Boston can move forward.
Boston will be fine.
Yeah.
No, but I watched your special and you talk about going to the funeral of a friend. First of all, it's a very, very funny. I feel it's a redundant saying Bill Burr had a really funny stand-up special.
Why is it so hard for you to say that about me?
I said it twice. I just root against you. I root against you.
You couldn't even open your eyes. All right, I'm admitting he said something that was mildly
Burr
amusing. This fucking
has
bastard.
Achieved some success. Another ginger from Boston. There's only room for one.
Just what
but,
I needed.
But I watched your special and it was, it's fantastic. You talk about losing a friend and going to the funeral. And of course, you have some very funny observations about that, but it opens up. It feels like you're opening up a little more in this special about personal life and some of your struggles. And it's fantastic.
Oh, thank you. You know, I kind of, you know, I was of that belief as most people that come from the East Coast that, you know, your anger and shit is like your security blanket. And it's made you who you are. It's why you're funny. It's why you have character. It's all of this stuff. And if you, for some reason, let go of this and actually enjoy life or maybe take responsibility for your actions and see how your behavior affects other people, for some reason, that's going to be like the undoing of you. Like, you know, there's a lot, I don't know about how you came up, but like in stand-up, there was a lot of stuff out there. Don't get married. Don't have kids. Basically, don't find happiness. That is the kryptonite to comedy. And I found that that's not true. And it's really the opposite is once you kind of, you know, get yourself to a new place, you can kind of revisit a lot of shit that you talked about with like a new, like sort of point of view of it.
Yeah.
I'm listening, but believe me, dude, I've only gone up like one flight of the Empire State Building. That is my messed up personality. So, you know,
this is the eternal question. Mm-hmm. And it's one I've thought about in comedy, which is you can be funny or you can be happy. And I really believed in that dichotomy. And I remember years ago living in LA and stating that to
getting Lisa. Molested, doing the things you had to do to get a late night talk show. Come on, it's out there now. All right.
It's better when you say
Conan,
it.
Say the name.
We all did what we had to do. You know, I'm here now.
Hey, it was a different time.
Different time.
A lot of couches.
You know what? No one wanted me on a couch. Right? I mean, let's just be honest.
Not even your therapist.
No one, yeah. No one was like, I got to get me a piece of that Conan. But
that featherless ostrich.
Why? Why do I invite you back?
I don't know.
It's not right.
Oh, my God.
But to your point, I really did believe that was a choice you had to make, and I was okay with
being miserable. Yeah,
being miserable, and
I thought it made me tough.
Yeah,
I thought all of that stuff, like you know, and all the movies that you watch, they made you believe. And I remember I watched The Dirty Dozen. And there's that scene where they have to shave in cold water. We ain't shaving and blah, blah, blah. So I was sitting there thinking like, oh, tough guys shave in cold water. And I shaved in cold water for like 7 years as like a fucking dental assistant and stand-up comedian. And like, it was like just something that I it was a subconscious thing that it was all of this stuff had happened to me. So you just always thought you got to get tougher. You got to get tougher. You got to get tougher. So all of this stuff that's happening to me, I won't feel it. And what I was really doing was I was walling myself off. And it was so funny. There was a lot of information out there about people like being walled off and all of that. And I would just watch them fascinated, like, how the fuck do you not know what you're feeling? Not even realizing that I was the exact same way. And it was mushrooms. Mushrooms turned me around. I had one mushroom trip and it sort of woke me up.
See, I've had people tell me I should do that. I've never done that. And I also have a long way to go. I'll admit that. I think I've made progress. You can be honest.
I really do think you have. And I think mushrooms might be good for you.
You've always thought pot would be good for me.
I did. Yes, I do.
Pot's a depressant. That pot is like, I don't know. And weed isn't weed anymore.
Oh, that shit
were like, yeah, these people came over for fucking Thanksgiving, right?
Why can't it just be Thanksgiving?
Because you know something? It's how I grew up talking.
Okay. I'm just saying.
I don't mean it in a bad way.
I went to my fucking kid's christening.
Yeah, I know. Sorry. So I had some friends over for what is arguably, I feel, the best holiday.
Uh-huh.
See, this is what I really feel. But I said fucking Thanksgiving. But I really love Thanksgiving.
Uh-huh.
Because, yeah, it's a nice hang and you don't have to buy anything. And
no, Christmas. Who doesn't like a fucking...
I can't stop looking at that
like
camera.
A fucking turkey?
I don't know why.
Who doesn't like some fucking giblets and gravy?
As he sips his dainty little coffee.
Iced coffee.
I had to get rid of the straw. I'm not evolved enough as a man that I can drink out of a straw and still feel all right about myself.
Number four. I just think of it as an aluminum dick.
Oh.
Just doing my part to show that I'm an ally. Aluminum
Can't
dick.
Can't wait to take another sip.
Oh, my God.
Oh, come on,
this
Sona.
Episode is called Conan Swallows. Anyway, what was I talking about? So I had some people over for Thanksgiving. This guy he has a joint, right? So I go, I'll take a couple of hits, whatever. I go, what is this? And he told me, he goes, it's a nice afternoon sativa, right? So didn't that sound like the wind was just blowing through my non-existent hair? So I go, all right. So I took three of the hits off of that thing and I just wasn't at Thanksgiving anymore. I mean, I was like there. I was like, people kept talking to me. My wife just kept going, he's useless. You got to wait a couple hours.
It's so powerful. Yeah. It's too late for me.
No, that's why I ended up texting you some of the jokes a few days later.
Yep, yep.
We, that thing where we were doing the thing, me and this other guy were high out of our minds and like nobody in this industry has been buying anything since the strike.
Yeah.
But they're taking meetings, wasting your time. So we were like, we should waste their time back. We were just pitching sequels to perfect movies that didn't need a sequel. And my favorite one was Two Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. This time he's keeping the sink. And it's all about the Indian guy. After he throws it, he picks the sink up and he's running with it. And Tommy Lee Jones is chasing him. It's just basically becomes the fugitive.
You merge fugitive.
Yeah. And my favorite part was he's standing near the waterfall. And he's like, this one sink means a lot to me. And Tommy Lee Jones is like, I don't care. he jumps. So I opened that up to my podcast listeners. Dude, regular people are so fucking funny now because they're pitching jokes. And so now they're funny. Somebody had the best one, wrote a sequel to Schindler's List.
Mm-hmm.
It was called Schindler's Wrist. It's about the carpal tunnel Schindler got writing the list and the therapy.
And it's just this?
And the therapy. And the therapy that happened. And the movie just ends with him being like, it feels pretty good. You know, just totally anticlimactic.
How you feeling, Schindler?
I gotta say, pretty good.
Hey,
pretty good.
Hey, you're a wizard.
Well, you've changed your life a lot, right? You've cleaned up your act a little bit.
I mean, I feel I have.
Yeah.
My wife, I don't know. I just don't know if I'm ever going to get over that hump.
She's, first of all, I love your wife.
Listen, enough about you and your private desires.
I'm just saying, we live in an experimental age. We live at a time.
Hey, man, you're sucking an aluminum dick.
Yeah.
I mean,
and I have no shame about it.
I got to tell you, the second.
Hold on a second.
The second the tie comes off, I'm telling you, man, this guy, he becomes a different guy.
Yeah. It was always a clip on.
No, my
anyway.
Wife, my wife is yeah, she's the best. She's the
Mia,
best.
You got, you guys came over for dinner and she's fantastic. And I feel I accomplished the same thing. I found the right person. I found someone who is on me, understands me, does not let me get away with shit. Sometimes she lets me get away with a little just because she's like, let him go.
Yeah, just let him blow out the lines a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Let him go. But Nia's amazing.
Yeah, she is. You know, just when you're fucked up like me, I do need, the one big thing in our thing is I had to let her know, I need an attaboy every once in a while. Okay, you can't just every fucking day be reading me the riot act. I mean, I know I'm a fucked up guy and I know that I'm difficult to live with, but every once in a while, you know, I did make waffles this morning, you know, I don't remember that being brought up.
No one says attaboy anymore, by the way.
Is that just expected?
Yeah.
Attaboy. No one says attaboy?
No one says attaboy.
How about there you go? There you go, Cody.
There you go. You did it.
Look at you. Look at it becomes real passive.
Look at Big Boy over here.
Yeah, it becomes real passive aggressive. There you go.
There you go.
Look at you. Must be nice. Must be nice. I got that one. I got that one from somebody who's completely fucked up their life. He goes, oh, yeah, you know, you're out there in L.A. doing things. Christmas is coming up. You got money for gifts. Must be nice. Must be nice. And I'm just like, oh, yeah, it is. Life is pretty good when you're not doing drugs, getting fired every 2 weeks.
Also, I'm sorry. This guy is coming to you with a real low bar. Oh, you know, must be nice.
That was it. That was it.
Must be nice.
That was it.
Must be nice. You got some sneakers you can put on your feet.
Oh, it was building towards that, you know. I mean, it's just... It just was one of those things. And I always told him, I said, listen, dude, if you're in a hole, if you're reaching up, I'll try to pull you out. But if you're face down in it, digging it deeper every day, I'm not getting involved in that. And he just couldn't get his head around that. And then he'd go, I don't know. The last time I talked to him, he goes, I've been working out. I've been working out. I go, oh, that's great. I thought he was turning his life around. He lost a fight to his son.
Wait, that was his workout? He came at his son and lost?
No, he was working out because he lost a fight to his son. So he's like, oh man, I gotta lay off. Gotta lay off this shit. It's just fucking. No, but that's one of the things,
that's
too.
That's the craziest motivation for I got to hit the gym.
I know.
Yeah. I'm signing up. Hey, well, what made you come in? Well, I'm fighting my 17-year-old son, and he got the better of me. So this was my wake-up call that I need to work out so I can beat the shit out of him.
Right, and people always say, like, why are so many people from Massachusetts funny? And I always go, like, because that is the kind of person you run into all the time. And he said that's without a bit of funny. It wasn't supposed to be weird.
Yep.
Or anything. He was just straight up talking to me, going like, yeah, man, he's strong now. I mean, he actually like knocked me down and stuff. So, you know, I've been doing the curls. And it's just like, do you ever think of just like maybe going out to like have a cup of coffee and figure out what's going on with you guys? Like, I don't think you really want to fight your son. I don't think he wants to fight you. No, dude, no, I know. But still, you know, just like, you know, it's one of those, I don't know. I go back to, and another thing too, I always remember when you were in Massachusetts is people would always, oh, you know that guy? Oh, dude, that guy's a character. He's a character. And everybody is like this, like, it's like they're very like uninhibited and they get into like their, these habits and these things that they do. And they don't realize like how colorful they are. And it's not until you travel and you go back and you come back to Massachusetts. You're like these, you go to like, I don't know what it's like now because like sports is like, so, I don't know. I can't stand the direction that it went into. But when I used to go to like tailgates, at the fucking Pats game, you know, when you were like drinking on Route 1, we used to park in this guy's backyard and then you walk down train tracks, active fucking train tracks, people walking, holding hands with kids. And then you would go up the, under Route 1, up the thing and then walk in. And just the shit that you saw, the stuff that people said, it was a comedy show from all the way, like people trying to be funny, people not being, just being who they were. You get to your section before the giant, you know, fucking screens took over.
Yeah.
There was a class clown in every fucking section.
Yeah.
And I used to try to be that guy. And sometimes I was. And then sometimes there'd be a guy funnier than me. And then I would just be entertained by him. And that happened at Red Sox games, Bruins games, big time, Celtics, all of those things. And I think like these TV screens and all of this shit that they have now, it's just like crowd control. Like the second there's a stoppage of play, that's like, you know, they got these dumb races
and your section has to root for it to like win a t-shirt and shit. It's it's dumb.
Were you, I was of the era where my brother and I would go down to Fenway Park without it, just would think, hey, let's go watch a Red Sox game, and we'd walk down and you could get bleacher seats.
Oh yeah, for like $8.
Yeah, and we would get bleacher seats and we would sit in the bleachers. No planning, no, like we got tickets and we would go and we'd sit up there, and what they did was they hired, this is back when the Red
Sox. They'd stand on Conan's shoulders and then pull themselves up over the green monster.
What's down. Happening up there, Luke?
Slide down.
Hey, Luke, people. Who's ahead?
The Reds are giving us a shellacking.
And then the beginning of his comedy career. Hey, you guys were supposed to pull me up. Fuck you, you fucking redheaded cunt. And then they just go.
Hey, that's the title of my autobiography. That was supposed to be a surprise. Random House next year. Fuck you, you fucking redheaded cunt.
I was doing a pre-promotion for
thank
it.
Thank you.
No, but we would sit in the bleachers, and what was hilarious was they used to hire like football players, these massive linebackers from, I think, BU, and they would, you know, at guys with massive necks, and they were the crowd control, but not professional crowd control. Their job was just if anything got out of line, if they saw some people like having a little too much to drink and maybe getting into it, starting to fight a little bit, these guys with massive necks from BU would go running up and they would wail on people. Yeah. And that was more, we went to watch that more than we could watch the game.
Well, the art of bouncing back then, it was, nobody knew how to de-escalate a situation. It was all just ramping it up.
Yes.
I still remember I was doing this gig at Nick's Comedy Stop, and downstairs was a nightclub. And I still remember the night these guys, they kicked this dude out. And I don't know if this guy ever walked again. They basically, it was a dance floor. And you know, you're in there, it's super fucking loud, you know, Belle Biv DeVoe era, like that shit was playing, you know, Poison or something. And then you just heard this commotion. And I looked over, and I think it was two bouncers, and they had just grabbed this guy, picked him up and started running full speed with them. And there's like innocent people there. And the crowd just parted like that. And they had him like 9 feet in the air. And the door jam is like 8. And they were both running like a 440 with this guy. And they, like from the middle of his back to the back of his head, just slammed into this metal thing. And he folded in half like a chair. Just threw him out onto Warrington Street. I remember everyone like,
I like that you can't. I like that you can't get through this without laughing.
Because, dude, it was.
That's the most Boston part of this. So anyway, his spine is severed.
No, but now, like, there was, like, no cameras.
So it's just like
if you ever did that today, forget about there'd be cameras. The owner of the club would be like, dude, I'm going to have a lawsuit every fucking weekend. You guys are fired. So they just threw that. Everybody was like, oh, and everybody just went, oh. And then the music's still playing, and like it was the funniest thing ever. As far as like, it took a good minute for relaxed dancing to happen again. It was kind of like
that is Belle Biv DeVoe.
No, it was definitely like the tone had been set. I'll never forget. Like they must have done that more than once because they were working together. They just grabbed the guy. I knew a guy that was a bouncer. He said sometimes we would just walk up to somebody just to start a fight, and we just walk up to him and be like, hey, man, you got to get out of here. And they didn't do anything. And they would just do it, hoping that they would, because they, you know, a lot of guys were on juice back then. And it was, you know, it wasn't the cream that they have now that also has like a suntan lotion or whatever, a sunscreen in it, whatever these guys have now.
That's what I use.
It was the horse tranquilizer shit. So they like wanted to get into fights. And I avoided all of that. I avoided all of that shit. Like, past a certain age, I just stopped. I was like, these guys of like people getting their fucking ears bit off and stuff. You know, I knew this guy, like, you know, his party trick, he would eat a light bulb.
And
gums bleeding, smiling at you. These guys.
It was a better time.
These guys are on another. These guys are on another level. I'm just going to stick to the comedy. And there was some really interesting. There was a lot of characters back then.
A lot of characters. It was funny. You did this special in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
I almost sensed you love to go to a place where you feel like you're not just going to, you could go to certain places where you're just going to get, where you know what their attitude is and you know you're going to get unconditional love. Obviously, you have a lot of fans in Seattle, but you go there, I think, because you want to challenge some of what Seattle may stand for right now in some ways. Is that possible?
Well, I did what I did in Seattle because of collectively the way they think. But like if I did it in Utah, I would have did it a different way.
Yes,
but
exactly.
It would have been the same thing to kind of like you know, like mess with them a little bit.
But you like the pushback. You enjoy it.
Well, yeah, because the thing I can't, I don't want to.
It's your, I mean, it's the cold shave for you. There's part of you that wants to go someplace. And you did this for years on my show, which was, you know, why I always loved you. But you would have the take that wasn't the comfortable take that everyone would applaud at. You would always want to put yourself in a situation where you
push
weren't...
people away.
Yeah,
that's what I'm
doing. But it was hilarious, and I think something that's unusual about you.
Well, the reason why I love the city, and then that theater for me is a funny place. Because everyone talks about like Nirvana, that they were the ones that knocked off the metal bands off the top 10 on MTV. And it was really, I felt, when Pearl Jam put out that video and Eddie Vedder climbed up at the Moore Theater and dropped down into the crowd. And it was like, okay, so that Nirvana thing wasn't a fluke. There's more of these bands. And it was like the first time that I felt like old. You know, I was about 23.
Yeah.
There was no more exciting birthdays. You know, I had, you know, 16, you get your license. 18, you're an adult. 21, you can drink. 22, you graduate college. This was the first kind of like, oh, now I just go, all right, bye. Good luck with your life. We're watching these people. And it was just funny to me to go back to that place where that happened, because it took me forever to like that band. And now I like them, but it took me forever because I was just like, fuck those guys. You
know? Wait, for Pearl Jam?
Yeah.
What was your beef with Pearl Jam?
They knocked Warrant off. It was so stupid.
Because you liked Warrant?
It wasn't that. It wasn't what they represented was I wasn't young anymore.
Oh, I see.
It was the end.
I see.
It was the end. Listen, I knew when all of those W bands were coming in that like, this is like the end of the shit.
W bands.
But there was also still some, like, I'll tell you this. What's their face? Oh my God, I'm flaking on the name here. When they did Monkey Business, Sebastian Bach.
Skid Row.
Skid Row.
Yeah.
Dude, them live on SNL doing Monkey Business or whatever. Dude, I'll put that up against anybody. Sebastian Bach and the whole band sounded fucking unreal. But the whole industry at that point was already moving on to grunge, and it's a killer album. So there was still, you know, any genre, there's going to be like awful versions of that. But like, that was just my first experience of like, oh, wow, this is like over, you know? So that's kind of why I picked that theater to do it, because it was funny to me, like, to come back to this place that reminded, and then, you know, Drop Dead Years, this whole mortality thing that I was thinking.
Yeah, you're talking about, you say there's these ages when men, not women, men just drop dead, and you say it's 49 to 61.
Yeah, and anything after that, you're just looking at a prolonged illness. No, you gotta.
But you say that's the age, that's this window. And he said it doesn't happen. It's really funny. I don't want to blow your special. I want like, people to watch it.
These are the years I'm in, so I've got to make sure I go to the hot doctor, and I got to make sure I watch what I eat, dude. And then, you know, then you can make it to that next level where, you know, you're that old guy at the golf club talking about how they just took your gallbladder out, and, you know, just talking about what ails you. I can never be that guy. I've tried so many times to get into golf. I just cannot fucking
do it. I tried it once and I thought it's going to take so much work for me to be very bad that I want to put that time into maybe getting a little better at guitar. Like that was my...
And nobody seems to be enjoying it. Like, you talking about anybody goes, you know, I was going, you know, first four holes were good. And then I couldn't have my fucking driver. And then it's like, why would you keep doing this? And it takes forever. And it's mind-numbingly, like, boring. It's just, I like watching pros do it. I like that my friends enjoy doing it. But I would rather go do shit.
Yeah.
I'd rather go play drums, ride a motorcycle, fly a helicopter. Like, why wouldn't you do that as opposed to fucking say, what are you, 112 yards? What do you think? What are you going? What are you going? You going 7, 8 iron? Yeah. And they got their fucking sniper scope. It's so dumb. It's so dumb. It's like, all you guys need to go home and either get divorced or work on your marriage, because there is nothing is happening here. This is... It's like a library. Like you got, it's like the whole, it's so quiet. Shh, shh, all of this shit. It's just bad. It's just bad. And everybody with the wacky, you either wear really wacky clothes like you're in a Three Stooges sketch or you dress,
hey, lady,
or you dress like you're, you know, Tiger Woods adjacent or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, he's a scratch golfer. Okay, your guy's a scratch golfer. Oh, is he? That's amazing. Like he's dunking. It's just like...
Well, this makes me happy because I've sometimes... I'm adjacent to a lot of people that are golfers. Yeah. Jeff Ross golfs a lot and likes to talk about golfing.
Eduardo said he golfs all the time.
Yeah.
No, listen. If that's what gets you going, that's cool. I tried.
No,
because I'm joking around. It does look like a great hang. It does look like a great hang.
We should talk all the time.
It's just it should be 9 holes. And I would argue maybe 7.
7 holes.
Like, is there a golf slider thing that I could do? Like 3 holes?
There are courses that offer 9 holes. Yeah.
There's one off the 5 that's a par 3. There's one down in Torrance that's an 18 hole par 3. It's like, that's what I'm going here with 3 clubs. 48 balls, and I'm not looking for any of them. I don't give a shit. And I count every fucking stroke. Like, if I go to tee off and I miss, that's a breakfast ball. No, it isn't. Yeah, exactly. It isn't.
Right.
It isn't. I was trying to hit the ball and I missed. That fucking counts. Yeah. Setting the tone. These are going to be honest scores today. And nobody looks at you. They all look down at their silly pants. No, it attracts and rewards dishonest people. A lot of contractors, real estate agents, lawyers. You're just running a lot of people.
You're a happy man now. That's what I like. I know your anger fuels you.
Dude, I went on a motorcycle ride the other day that was fucking life-changing. It was fun. I was riding.
Where'd you go?
I went up the canyons in, I think, La Cañada or something like up that way. And it was my buddy's bike, and it was a big bike, and I was, those big Harleys with the fucking fairings, so it's like scary, it's like you're on a Clydesdale, and on the way up, I was kind of scary, but on the way back, I kind of got the feel for it, and I kind of, did my version of tearing through the canyon, and I was euphoric for like 2 days doing that, and that's like just not something golf has never done for me. Like, I remember a couple times I've hit good shots, and people are going, that's the shot that's going to make you come back. It's like, no.
No, it's not.
Do you have nighttime golfing? I would do that. Like those, like those driving range things. Those, with the big net. That looks like fun.
That's
those chicks there, the people drinking
top
stuff.
Golf.
Yeah, top golf. Those that looks fun. like if I was young, this is like a nightclub with golf. That looks fun. But like to actually just become a member, have to vote on things. Like you join this sports HOA. Okay, we got a dentist here. Seems like a good guy. He wants to be a member. Let's see, Conan, you take him out for a round of golf and feel him out. Feel if he's our kind of person that we want in our little clubhouse here. Yeah, I don't know.
An HOA.
It really is.
You talked about one thing. There's so many things you bring up that I relate to. And one is you don't own a gun, but you like guns. And you bring this up in your special. And I kind of relate, meaning
I'm too scared I would not, to own a gun.
No, I don't want a gun in my house.
I'd love to have one.
Oh, you would? I don't want a gun in my house. I don't want to. But I've kind of always been fascinated by guns, and the times that I've been in situations where someone's let me shoot guns, I've found it to be very cathartic. It's really interesting to me. I like to kind of get the basics down of it, but I don't want to own one.
Yeah.
I understand that.
Because I know that I am like, I mean, the joke I do, I lose my cell phone. Like I'll walk into a room to get something that I forgot, and then I will leave. And in the process of getting that, I'll have left whatever was in my hand.
Yeah.
And my passport, I'll get to the airport. Oh, fuck, and I got to go back. Like, I am too, whatever it is, however my brain is, like, you have to be on it to own a fucking gun, especially if you have kids in the house. And, like, you kind of got to know. I don't know where your skill set is, So, yep. Like, I learned a lot of shit, in aviation, where is flying within your ability. You know what I mean? So you're always looking at the weather and stuff like that. And I just always look at that stuff. You keep the odds in your favor. And you don't just do something when you're up there because what you're flying can do it. It's like, do you have the ability to do it? Is it safe to do it here or whatever? And, just doing stuff like that. Like, I just look at, like... I go into gun stores all the time. I like the old school, like revolvers, all like those cop shows that I watch. I'm like, oh, that's the Clint Eastwood right there. That's Beretta had that or whatever, And I like the old school, like rifles and stuff. But I'm not into like the,
I don't know, like the semi-automatics.
No.
Like, what's
no.
the one that everybody wants to get? The
AK, what is it? AR-15, yeah.
Yeah, to me, that's like the electric car of the fucking gun world, you know? But like, if you just have a revolver, that's like driving a stick, you know what I mean? You got to be good at it. That shit's kind of like, you know, you're just watching your misses until you hit the fucking person. What?
It's true, though.
How many fucking opportunities do you need? Jesus Christ.
It's like 900. Anything that's firing fucking 900 rounds a second. You don't have to. There's no skill.
It's a gunfight meets T-ball. Yeah, so, no, but that's also like another thing, too, is what I'm trying to do now, like when I'm going out there, is I'm trying to more like bring people together, which is a really hard thing to do because everything gets politicized, like fires, viruses. I did Kimmel the other night. I deliberately was apolitical, complimented the fire department, Department of Water, and somebody takes a clip and said that I you know, Bill sides with Gavin Newsom. It's like, I couldn't pick that guy out of a fucking lineup. I've seen him after games when they cut to KTLA and they show him for a second, salt and pepper hair, sort
sure,
of a square.
Sure, he's a game show host, yeah.
Yeah, I have a vague understanding of who that guy is, but like, I didn't know what party he was in. I don't watch any of that shit. I don't watch any of it.
You don't watch news. You're not a news junkie.
There is no news.
Yeah.
There is no news. It's just all people's fucking opinions. And then politicians are grossly underpaid. So they let you vote. So you get to choose who goes, oh, my guy won or my guy lost or whatever. And then they go in there. And then the rest of the time, you don't get to like vote on what they're voting. They vote on it. And the people that own them, you know, they're working for them. And all of those guys, like, you know, they're all worth like $40, $60, $80, $100 million, making like six figures a year. How do you do that legally? How do you, Conan?
I don't have the answers.
I know you don't. And everybody, but the geniuses, they got everybody, like, they divide every fucking time. CNN does it. Fox News does it. And I find these people who watch that shit. It's like people who come out of prison who are institutionalized, you know, and they can't fucking live unless they're inside. You watch that 24-hour news enough. You know, and you follow, you know, you start thinking paranoid thoughts and you follow those paranoid thoughts onto the internet. There's going to be a website that agrees with whatever fucked up thought you have.
Sure, yeah.
And then validates. And then you just go like crazy. Like my last time I did, I did Kimmel. Somebody wrote to me and was like dead certain that Jimmy Kimmel was a CIA operative.
Well, he may be, actually. I don't like to add fuel to the fire. But
oh, okay.
I was with him in the CIA for a while. It was me.
Now, what did you do? What did you do to get kicked out? That the CIA disowned
they said,
you?
We don't want a hairless ostrich.
Featherless.
Oh, okay. Featherless. It was me. It was Fallon. There was a bunch of us that were in heavy CIA training.
You were.
I was asked to leave. Fallon kept singing. They asked him to leave.
I was into conspiracy theory, but then like once you're actually in the thing that people are conspiring about and you realize how ridiculous their theories are because you actually have a little bit of information, it's like, oh my God, like that's me. That's how I was. I used to think all of this shit and I was putting things together and I forgot that I didn't know any of these people. I was a zillion miles away or whatever, but...
My least favorite thing in this era we're in is everyone's certain. There is certainty. And I like, whatever happened to uncertainty? Whatever happened to... I like comedy where I admit, I don't know. I don't know what the answers are.
Yeah.
And I'm going to think of some stuff that is amusing to me and share it with you and hope that you find it funny. But I see it a lot in comedy now. There's a lot of certainty. And in politics, everyone's absolutely 100% certain. Yeah. About everything.
Yeah, it's
and
weird.
That's the thing.
I was guilty of that like early, or I like to think earlier in my career. I was doing this, and then, you know, now I'm trying to do more of that. So I always try to like, always just let people know that I don't watch the news and I don't read. And this is just what I feel.
It comes across that you don't have read. To do it. It's very clear.
Okay, good. No, that's good. Cause I don't want the responsibility of that. Like, you know,
can you read? Are you able to read?
I mean,
you're acting it sound like it was a decision that you made.
No, it depends on like, you know, when I was really fucked up, like really fucked up and didn't know I was fucked up, it would take me 20 minutes to read one page.
Wow.
Because every word or a sentence would remind me of something. Like my brain was like on spin cycle, and it took a long time to understand that. I just thought I was dumb, because that's what they said when you were young. There wasn't like all of these diagnoses. You were just an idiot. And so that's what I thought. I said, this is taking so long because I'm dumb. And then after I was, I think I might be a little traumatized. I don't know what the fuck it is. But I also knew enough not to take any drugs because of it. It's like, I can kind of like try to figure this out and get myself.
Yeah.
It's like all these idiots taking Ozempic. It's like, do you really think after all that cake you ate that all you have to do is shoot this thing into your fucking leg and then you're going to be skinny? Like, okay, not to do a pun here, but you can't have your cake and eat it. Like, there's going to be an unbelievable disease on the other side of that. You don't just get to melt the pounds away and there you go. Well, that was weird. And then I just did this.
You too.
Somebody was trying to claim that these sugar companies are now breaking down what's in Ozempic and they're putting a chemical in their candy that's going to override the Ozempic. And it's just like, so my body is basically a battlefield. Like, I'm not even a person at this point. Well, that's my thing, why I don't watch the news or politics, because nobody's talking about that shit. Or you watch like a fucking baseball game and everybody's holding up a sign of somebody they know that beat or died of cancer and nobody's saying why or asking why to all that. They never did that. People used to smoke at the fucking game and you knew less people that died of cancer. Like, I want people to start holding up signs like, thank you, Roundup. And you watch how quickly MLB will cut away from that because they're in business with those guys.
Yeah.
Oh, here I go. Now I'm going on the internet.
No, that's okay. That's okay. So you're positing that there's a lot of carcinogens out there and no one's talking about it.
No, I just wish that regular people, which is most of us, would just stop yelling at each other. Stop letting these fucking idiots get you stirred up. Stop arguing with bots. Like, no matter what the fuck is on there, like, it'd be, the LA fires or something, all you gotta do is, because of Biden, because of Trump, Kamala. That's all you gotta do. And then all of these fucking people just jump on the hook.
And it's a fire. It used to be something you didn't argue about. There's a bad fire.
I know. Just watch Chinatown and just realize that this place shouldn't be here.
Right.
We've all known this.
It's a desert.
Yep. I can't believe I live in a desert and there's no water in the hydrants. Oh, Jesus. Is someone your ice bath? People, your lawn is all green. This did like we're living like idiots out here. We know that we're living on like this. We're living on the moon, and it looks like we're living in New Hampshire.
Right.
Like that's eventually that's going to come around. And every year we have a drought, and they tell you not to take as long a shower, and blah blah blah. And we all fucking blow it up. I think we're all responsible for that. I don't think you just blame it on like a political party. And I don't have a solution for that, but I don't think the solution is to sit there and blame people and try to be, it happened during your watch, Conan. This is on you. St. Francis Dam disaster is on you. By the way, they found out years later that they built that dam into a prehistoric mudslide and they didn't have the technology. And that guy carried the guilt of that. When the St. Francis Dam collapsed out here, and like a 30-foot wall of water went to through the valley. They found people's bodies down in like fucking Mexico. And this guy carried them.
He can't get through this without laughing. That is so Boston.
I just
can't. They found bodies in Mexico.
I mean, I just can't imagine. You're in your log cabin or whatever. Jimmy crack corn and I don't care. All of a sudden this fucking wall of water. And then if there is a God, you wake up talking to him, still holding your banjo, like spitting out fish. What the fuck happened?
Spitting out fish.
Like a cartoon.
I know. I know, like a cartoon.
Oh, my God.
I can't believe you're the guy who built that shit. And you're like, what happened? He probably heard it. He probably heard it go through the sound of it. What is that? What is that? That's the shit you built, you fucking asshole.
What made you think of the St. Francis Dam? Look that up. When did that happen? Where did this?
Oh, this is even better. After the dam collapses, some fucking asshole wanted to climb up it to do like the original selfie or whatever. He climbed up on top and he fell off and died.
Oh.
It was built between 1924 and 1926.
Uh-huh. And when did it collapse?
1927.
Dam failed in 1928.
Yeah. Oh my God.
So we're sitting here talking about current events and you just
go right to the St. Francis Dam collapse.
Because I know you like old-timey shit.
I do.
You like Winston Churchill and Theodore Roosevelt. I've been to his house. He has the library of a 90-year-old. The thing was missing, he should just greet me with a pipe.
I have a pretty good library.
He does. They're all leather-bound.
Oh, come on. They're not all leather-bound.
Oh, yeah, no, he was.
You know what I should have in my house?
He was totally intimidating. He was going, I've read all of these.
And he goes, I did not.
He goes, and all this information is in here.
It's all in my mind.
And you will all sit here and listen to it. Oh, my God. It was the longest night of my life.
Oh, come on.
I get it, Conan. You've read about the Third Reich. Jesus Christ. Dennis Miller would have been like, take it easy.
Take it easy, cha-cha.
Yeah, Jesus. I would love to see the two of you guys.
One of my old
brains going back and forth.
One of my old girlfriends took a photo of me, and it's like on this beautiful beach, like 1994, when I took like my first vacation ever, and I'm on the beautiful beach in the Caribbean, and I'm sitting there, and I'm reading William Shirer's Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. It's like a telephone book with a swastika on the cover. And I'm completely in shade because, God forbid.
Wait, what country were you in?
No, I was in the Caribbean somewhere.
Oh, Caribbean.
And so,
okay.
God forbid, I get any sunlight at all. And I'm wearing, Rose Kennedy's sun hat underneath an umbrella. And I'm reading this giant morality tale about the rise and fall of the Third Reich in tiny print.
I went to Prague and I went to that church where those guys holed up who shot that SS guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And they stayed there for like fucking, I don't know how many days, just fighting these guys off. They tried to flood it and drown. They still got the bullet holes in there.
Yeah.
It's unreal. Like World War II is just like this thing, because it wasn't here. When you go over there, it's just, they still got the, like, if you go into like Berlin.
Sure, yeah.
And what, the few structures that are left, you're like, oh yeah, this really fucking happened. You know, where you go to like countries that they bombed. And they just have the ugliest buildings because after the war, they were just leveled and their economy was done. So they just had to like just build these things really quickly.
I was doing my travel show with my team and we checked into this town in Linz, named Linz. And we're walking around and I said, every building here looks like it was built starting in 1950. Man, they, for whatever reason, they bombed the shit out of the place. And so I got on my phone, looked up Linz, like what happened in Linz. And Linz... God. Is the, it wasn't his birthplace, but it was the town where Hitler grew up. The Allies knew that. It was also, they built armaments there. And so they bombed the shit out of it. And you can see that every single building, and I've seen this in Cologne too, where the only thing they didn't hit was the cathedral. And I've talked to people there and they've said, people who think, you know, war, who romanticize war, need to come to these places.
Oh no, it's brutal.
Because every single building was demolished. Everything.
Dude, there's in what do they call it now? Chechnya, whatever they're calling it now. There's a town where I haven't gone. I would never. It's just too sad to go to. But like when they killed that SS guy, for some reason they assassinated him.
Well, the resistance assassinated him.
So they found out whatever town some of those guys they thought they were from, and they fucking killed everybody in that town.
Yeah.
So they have like this, you know, these silhouettes of like, you know, men, women, children. It's fucking brutal. It's brutal. And then what's funny is when you go.
What's funny? This is unbelievable. Go.
I'll tell you what's funny is you go to Stockholm, Sweden. Okay, and it looks like you're in the Keebler Elf's like home city.
Yeah,
and you're like, well, why did this one survive? And you found out they remained neutral.
Yeah,
yeah. So they let the Nazis. They looked the other way as they used their trains to go into Norway. And then that whole fucking thing was wild because I went over there and they were talking about how, you know, Norway had fought for to get the bottom third of their country liberated from Sweden, and they had just gotten it back, and then. During World War II, I don't know if this was some like, you know, petty shit. They let the Nazis go in there and, you know, fuck them all up. So then Norway's economy was flattened and Sweden, just because they were still standing, became this economic power. So Norway was so desperate, they tried to sell the bottom of the third of their country back again. And Sweden was like, yeah, no, we don't want it.
Jesus.
And then they found oil there. And then the Swedes go, now we go over there and do jobs that they don't want to do. But everybody has like a sense of humor about it now because no one was alive when all of that shit happened. You know what I mean?
Right.
Kind of. But it was, Yeah, it's pretty fucking, it's pretty wild.
Well, I knew this is where the podcast was going to go. At the very beginning, I said, I'm going to get us to the devastation in World War II.
Hitler was into architecture, though. That's why he left, like, Paris and Prague alone. He just, like, they're too beautiful to destroy. That's just such a funny, like, wrinkle in his personality. Like, because he's murdering 6 million people. Oh, is that Art Deco?
He did, at the end, want them to burn Paris. And one general was like...
Because he couldn't have it. He was
exactly.
Fucking jilted lover.
Yeah, exactly. So at the very end, he wanted to, you know, I'm tired of you letting Hitler slide. Bill Burr.
One of my favorite Norm jokes of all time.
What?
He was on Letterman, he was talking about Hitler, and he's like, you know, he goes, the more I read about this guy, the less I like him.
God bless you, Norm.
Totally presented it like he was the only guy who had ever read up. I don't know if you ever heard about one of the worst people of the last century, but
I'm getting into it. Listen, I want to make sure we get the word out on your special. It's out right now. Right. And it is called?
Drop Dead Years.
Yeah.
And it's on Hulu. It's streaming on Hulu. And I'm very, very proud of it. And I'm looking forward to, I guess when this airs, I'll be doing Glengarry Glen Ross on Broadway at the Palace.
That's fantastic.
If you'd like to come, if I'm allowed to invite a ginger. I might have to have Odenkirk invite you. Or maybe that's, we'll find a loophole.
Yeah, yeah. Me and Ed Sheeran will come together with Ron Howard. From the day I met you, no one's mind works like yours, and it's a beautiful thing to behold.
Oh, I didn't know which way that was going. The day I met you, I was like, why did we book this guy? The way your brain works, I'm constantly saving your stories. It's exhausting. You're exhausting, Bill. I right back at you, man. I always love coming on whatever you're doing and hanging out or whatever there it is. It's effortless, man. You're one of the funniest guys I know. And you know that's sincere because I couldn't look at you when I did it.
I know. You
looked
over
that way.
Two
Irish guys can't look at each other.
We can't look at each other. That's another.
All right, let me tell you something, you fucking cunt. I love you to death. I wouldn't throw you in shite for all the fucking shillelaghs in fucking O'Toole Town.
That's another Norm line. He had a line once where he said, I went home to Christmas break and it was all right, but at one point I accidentally made eye contact with my father. And I'm like, I know what he's talking about.
Oh, yeah.
We all know what he's talking about.
Oh, man, that guy.
All right, Bill Burr, go in peace to love and serve the Lord or whatever.
That's it. All right. Well, thank you guys so much for having me. And I don't know how to wrap this up. This is your job. That's it, everybody. We'll be back after the break.
We'll be right back. You got to go buy a mattress. We'll tell you which one to get.
Sarah Michelle Gellar when we return.
Courtney Thorne Smith when we come back.
I could go back to way old shows that I did. Say we got so-and-so next.
Yeah. Okay. Coming up.
Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend with Conan O'Brien, Sonam Avsesian, and Matt Gourley. Produced by me, Matt Gourley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs, Jeff Ross, and Nick Liao. Theme song by The White Stripes. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. Take it away, Jimmy. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, and our associate talent producer is Jennifer Samples. Engineering and mixing by Eduardo Perez and Brendan Burns. Additional production support by Mars Melnick. Talent booking by Paula Davis, Gina Batista, and Britt Kahn. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 669-587-2847 and leave a message. It too could be featured on a future episode. You can also get 3 free months of SiriusXM when you sign up at SiriusXM.com/Conan. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend wherever fine podcasts are downloaded.